Hi everyone, what if I told you that drawing straight lines, curves, dots, circles in a pattern can heal you, let you enter into the flow zone and make you more accepting of yourself? Some of you are likely to be amused, some may become curious, and some of you may nod in agreement, having experienced the magic of Zentangle art. Today on Chasing Sunshine, we are fortunate to have with us the founders of Zentangle Art, Maria Thomas and Rick Roberts from Massachusetts, USA, to tell us more about this beautiful art and how we can use it for our emotional and mental well-being. While Maria is a professional illustrator, Rick has forayed into printing, typesetting, flute designing, and manufacturing. He is a deep meditator, has been a monk for 17 years, living largely in the US and partly in India. Welcome to Chasing Sunshine, Rick and Maria. Thank you for making time for us.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning or good evening.
Yes, yes.
Both. Good morning to you.
And good evening to you. What time is it there?
Thank
again?
You. It is 8 o'clock, 8 p.m.
Oh, okay.
Tell me something about the journey. How did it all begin?
Well, you start this time.
So, after about a year of us being together, you know, about a year after we got together, almost 20 years ago, that Rick came into my studio, and I'm a working artist. I've been a working artist since I was five, so believe it or not. And I was working on a major piece. I'm a lettering artist by trade, and this big piece, like the piece behind us, a big letter, and in the background were all these tiny patterns, like the Book of Kells, or, you know, those big manuscripts from the Middle Ages, and that type of thing. And I had been working on it for about 3 hours. And Rick walks into the studio, and he said, babe, what's for lunch? You know, something, you know, crazy like that. And I came out of this reverie, daydream state, and I was just explaining to him, like, wow, I feel so good. I can't believe 3 hours went by and I don't remember. Well, it's just wonderful. And I was describing this place that I was at. And?
Well, so part of my background is I lived in an ashram for about 17 years. So, and I've been to India 3 times and was very passionate about understanding that whole, you know, aspect of the possibilities of life and what's there and or here. And everything that she was describing was the same types of things that somebody would go to India for, would want to sit in meditation, would want to explore these different possibilities. And she is so not the type of person that
I would never be able to sit and do nothing and think about nothing. I wouldn't be able to do it.
But she was nonetheless in that you know, flow state or relaxed focus or whatever you want to call it. And so we started like looking at, well, what was different about this than other times that she's putting pen to paper? Because, you know, she does. That's her daily work, you know, just doing all of this pen to paper. But in this, she wasn't looking back and forth. So it wasn't like, okay, what's the address for the envelope and back and forth, or what's the date for the wedding and all of this. She was just putting in these really simple patterns in this great big gold leaf letter.
And there were no mistakes. I couldn't make any spelling mistakes. It was just this, almost like the perfect setting for an artist to just do their creating without any worries at all.
And even there was no up and down, because she was like rotating the piece as comfortable, and there was no worry about when am I going to finish, because I just have to fill up this existing space
It was all defined. I didn't even have to, I didn't have to think. It was unbelievable.
So could just focus on each individual stroke. So now we're looking at this and we're analyzing it, and it's this quiet Saturday afternoon. And we started to think of all of the people that would watch Maria letter and wish they could letter like she did. And
so I used to do perform it. We're going to interrupt each other because I like to perform in front of people. I don't have any fear or any of those things. And I love having people just appreciate a pen and paper and what can be done with it. You know, in such a wonderful, free form thing. So Rick and I used to do shows together, and we would allow the people to watch as I was creating whatever they were buying, and Rick would be there always either taking notes in his head or taking notes on paper. And the people that were there watching, they said, oh, if I could only do this, I would be happy. Oh my God. I mean, if I could do this, my life would be different.
But they would say,
and there was always a but.
And then there was a list after that. But I don't have the talent. I don't have the time. I don't have the money for a studio. I don't have the supplies.
I don't have the capabilities.
You know, all of these things. So and we ended up with this list of 10.
That 10 was excuses.
Like over and over and over, people would say the same thing.
And Rick always goes at it in an analytic way that I probably would have said, yeah, that's cool, you know. But he took it and yeah.
But even you, Jay, you're gonna have, like, when people hear what you do, there's probably like 5 questions that you hear over and over again. Well, what's it like when you know, there's some common questions that you're gonna get, right?
Ooh,
so
yes.
we get these questions. So now on this Saturday, we're remembering those people that say, I would be so happy if I could, but for no talent, no time, et cetera, et cetera. So we've realized that, well, what Maria was doing at that time was something that if you could just write your name, you've already done all of the necessary strokes to make those simple patterns she was doing. So you didn't have to wait 10 years to practice calligraphy and over and over and over to get the muscle memory. You could start right away. Yeah. So the idea came that maybe we could do something for all of those people that wish they could create like Maria. And I don't think they wanted to create what Maria was creating. I think they wanted
to feel what I was feeling.
They could sense that something magical is happening. Oh, I want that magic, right? I don't want to make the letter G. I want the magic, right? So.
Well, I just want to jump in here, because we knew at that moment when Rick finally says, well, you don't understand. You were meditating. I said, no, I don't think so. But he says, no, that's what people go to India for. That's what they spend years, you know, trying to go to that place. So I said, Rick, this is really important. We have to do something about this. And he says, I know. We have to acknowledge that this thing happened to the two of us for a reason.
And this is where we, you know, this is where I like to inspire people or call people's attention to the gifts that come to you, the gifts that come to whoever's listening to this, is that to take them as really precious gifts and cultivate them as it's a seed of something. Because what we did, you know, the one contribution I think that we had was to recognize that, yeah, this is something potentially really, really important.
Right.
And so that day we made a reservation at a bed and breakfast in Western Mass, and we got a blank book, and we left the house to go someplace. Because even in your own house, it's like, oh, I gotta fix this, or somebody calls, or
it's
whatever.
It's a busy house.
Right.
So we just went away and we just wrote all of our ideas in this blank book. And out of that weekend, or that Sunday and Monday, came the whole method, all of the steps. Nothing's changed. the name, everything came, the whole idea of all of the context, all of the foundation.
How we were going to teach it, where, everything.
Everything. So everything. The message is how many ideas come to you and to whoever's listening that to give that, you know, we for lack of a better term, say it's our angels talking, you know, but right. However you put it in context, however you want to see it, there's that, you know, there's some well of beauty and creativity that everybody can tap into and to really yeah. take that. And so we just came back, we got the idea, we started teaching at the bed and breakfast. There was somebody there.
So what happened, to just so that you can understand how we took those list of 10 excuses to design what we were going to do. Well, one of the first things people said, I don't have the time. Right. So we thought, well, how much time would people be willing to give up in a day? And I thought, well, they take a coffee break, they take a cigarette break, or they take a, you know, break at work. Are they willing to do 15 minutes, maybe a half an hour? But 15 minutes, we thought, well, we'll go really small, right?
Small,
15
right.
minutes. So I sat down and drew for 15 minutes to see how much coverage we could get in 15 minutes. And that's how we came up with the 3.5-inch square pieces of paper that we work on, because that could be feasibly finished in one sitting. And the whole thing about Zentangle, one of the things about Zentangle is finishing a work in a small amount of time, because most art forms, you have to leave them and then go back and then spend 3 hours and then go back. And there's the sense of accomplishment isn't there right away, but we wanted people to feel it every time they put pen to paper. So, okay, so there's, here we got 3.5 inches. How much are they willing to spend? And I'm thinking, well, 3.5 inches, how much does a piece of paper that 3.5 inches cost? And a pen, a pencil, you know? And so what were some of the other things?
Well, and I don't have a studio. Well, you can put it all in your pocket. You can do it if
it's
you need to.
It's 3.5 inches.
Yes.
And then we looked for the very best material. So we got some of we have this beautiful, beautiful paper from the oldest still running paper mill in Italy. The best pens from Japan. The best thing that we could find of everything as an act of respect for yourself, as an act of respect for the art. And it just lifts you up to a different level when you're using the best materials. And even if you don't get ours, you still want to get the best place and the best everything.
If you were going to draw in the sand, you would want the best stick you could find, or the best rock, or whatever. You wouldn't take the worst stick. You want all the best materials, and it could be anything, whatever in your mind, because you have more respect for your work the minute you elevate your tools. Isn't that right?
That's amazing.
And then we put these steps together, and for some strange reason, you know, this is an art form, but we ended up having this first step be gratitude, and the last step be gratitude. And it just sets the stage for a whole different mindset. When you sit down and appreciate the materials, appreciate the time that you have to make something beautiful, it just shifts. And then you look at what you made and appreciate that. It changes everything, and it becomes this metaphor. And what we didn't expect was the power of the metaphor, the physical healings, the spiritual healings, the mental healings that have been the knock-on effect for that.
Those were real surprises. I mean, and wonderful surprises. It was almost like, we're giving people this gift of Zentangle, and they gave us those gifts in return. Mm. And that's what kept us going. And people would come to us and grab us by the forearms. You know how when you grab somebody, you say, you don't understand, this saved my life. And we at first we thought, oh, that's cool, right? But this kept happening. And every person that came to us to tell us that, it was a different story. It wasn't that it healed one aspect of life. It healed all of them. Any problem they had, Zen Tangle seemed to be able to bring you down to a point where you could handle it a little better. Right? It didn't heal people, but it allowed them to deal with what they had.
You know, and we're sort of ranting here and going on and on.
but it's a wonderful journey that you're talking about. And for our listeners, you know, can you just describe Zen Tangles? What are the patterns like? Because they're very captivating to see, but at the same time, they look very difficult to create. So tell us something about the patterns.
Well, it's a magic trick.
Yeah, it's like a magic trick. And Jay, you said it. It seems so complicated.
Yeah.
And that's part of the charm of it, is you're looking at something that's so complicated. And when you look at a finished piece of the art, and you can see a little bit and sort of behind us out of focus there. But and also, I just realized that this is audio only, so you can go online and just do a web search for Zen Tangle art, and you'll see some idea of what it is. But each one of those pieces of art are very, each one, there's no one difficult stroke in it anywhere. And almost anybody, we usually start with from second graders to no end at all. And the patterns are simple. They're inspired by all different cultures.
Yeah,
some
by
Mandy.
I just wanted to jump in. When we first started, we came up with some simple patterns, really, really simple.
Right.
But then we started to research patterns in cultures all over the world. And of course, Mindy came up. And that's probably why you felt comfortable with this. It had a little bit of a Mindy flavor to it, but not quite, you know? And then some stuff from the Aztec Indians or some from New Zealand.
Persian pottery.
Or
architecture.
Architecture. It started coming from all angles. It was coming at us and attacking us. And we had so much information to work with, and we kept saying, how come nobody's doing this? How come, what happened was people who actually did this, but not people who taught it. And our vision was teaching it in a way to teach it.
And it takes, so we're not really drawing it. It's like you take this stroke and that stroke and you put it together like this, and then you repeat it. And you don't even need to know what the end result is going to look like.
Lovely. So the technique is very simple.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the outcome is amazing.
Yes.
And so you take people that look at it before they start and say, well, I could never do this.
That's famous last words.
And then 15 minutes later, they've done it. And then we ask them, so what else do you know you can't do?
Right. And I guess there's a deep underlying philosophy to Zen Tangles and the techniques, and there are a lot of metaphors, you know, where you're using boundaries. And in your book, The Book of Zen Tangles, you've begun with these lines that the life is full of patterns, you know. And tell our listeners something about these metaphors that we can, you know, relate to with this art.
Well, that's Rick's department, because he never metaphor he didn't like. So I'm going to let him tell the metaphor of pots.
Well, one of the things that we hear from new students saying to us is, I see patterns everywhere. Like all of a sudden, there's an appreciation for the pattern in the wallpaper, the pattern in the sari that you see, or the kurta, whatever it is, you see these patterns, and then you look at them with a new appreciation. But that isn't the only place there's patterns. There's patterns in our life, there's patterns in society, there's patterns in social relationships, in interpersonal relationships, in nature. And once you see that, okay, now you're noticing a pattern, then you can also think about from a Zentangle perspective, our slogan is anything is possible one stroke at a time.
Yes.
No one paints a painting with, you know, thousands of simultaneous brush strokes. You know, no matter how great the painter was, they used a brush in a hand and a stroke at a time. And
yes.
after you end up with whatever it was. So the same thing with our life. And you can make those changes, you can make them deliberately. And one of our great, you mentioned boundaries. I think one of the things that, because we're always puzzling, or at least I'm always puzzling about what brings about so many of the positive effects. And we're not saying that Zentangle will bring only positive effects for everybody, for everything. So we're not making claims, but we're still amazed at the stories we hear. And I think part of it is for many people, particularly young kids, they're, when they do the first pencil border on their tile to set the boundaries within which they're going to draw, for many people, this is the first time that they've established their own personal boundary space.
Within, yes. Or we're allowed to.
Amazing. Yes.
And so these things carry on, and we don't even have to talk about them. They just, they're just absorbed internally, and then somehow this creative flow starts to take place. And it's not that Zentangle gives somebody something. I think it's more like, you know, maybe an electrician comes to your house, right? And your lights aren't working. He doesn't bring energy. He doesn't bring light bulbs. He may not even bring wires. He just notices that, oh, this fuse needs to be connected. It just wasn't screwed in all the way. And so he shows you how to screw it in and how to check it, you know? And all of a sudden, the lights are bright, but the energy was always there. The bulbs were always there. So we have everything we need. It's just where there's a connection to be made.
And
so this connects you to that inner creativity that's already wired up. You just have to access it.
Well, our job is to convince people that they can do this, because most of them come to us very negatively, but they come to us.
About themselves.
Yes. And they sit there and, I'm not going to, and, you know, don't watch me because I'll never be able to create this. But our gift to them is that we just allow them to do this and then discover that, I guess I can do this. I can do this. And our classrooms are filled with people like leaving with this, like, oh my gosh, what just happened to me? And it's not just about the drawing. It's about this discovery that this was in them all along.
All along, yes. And then you're using strings also when we're talking about boundaries. And of course, you know, I guess a lot of people set boundaries or, you know, behave according to the boundaries set by others for us. And when we are drawing Zentangles, probably we are just overriding those boundaries set by others. So that's such a beautiful concept.
Well, so that's why we put, and I don't know how this all came together. We continue to be amazed. But that's why we do the boundary, the border, and the string and pencil. Because you can use it as support. But unlike a coloring book that has these big black lines that somebody else printed.
Yes.
First of all, you created them yourself, and they're in pencil. So when you're working with the pen, if you're so inspired, you can just go beyond them. Okay, well, I set this boundary. Now I feel comfortable. I'm going to go outside it.
Yeah.
And you have that power. You have that ability. You have that confidence.
And we encourage it. That's the thing. Yeah. Here's this boundary. So now you're feeling really comfortable. But the minute some inspiration comes and you want to get exuberant with your strokes, or I have an idea that doesn't include that boundary, we redefine the boundary, our own boundaries.
And, wonderful. And there's one more thing, you know, which I find very unique in your kit, in your Zentangle kit. There's no eraser.
No eraser. This is on purpose, and we talk about it all the time.
Well, there's no eraser in life, you know.
Like, right.
When I was making flutes, my teacher, I studied Native American flute making, and my mentor teacher asked me one day, "Well, what's not on the end of your knife?" Because we would do a lot of hand carving, and
yes.
I'm sensing, you know, a teaching moment here. So I say, I don't know what's not on the end of the knife, you know, the end of the handle. He says, there's no eraser.
Right.
So if you make a cut, you can't go back and uncut it. You know, it's cut.
That's profound.
And
okay.
But that leads into our whole no mistakes philosophy. Is like, okay, now that you've done something and there's no eraser, like you can't unring a bell or, you know, all of that. Now what do you do with this? Now what do you make of this, not only to just fix it?
No, this is, if you make a line that you're not happy with, that's what
like
that's
a so-called mistake. So if you make a so-called mistake on your art, or you spill your chai on it or whatever, right? Now what is your response? And this to us is the most, one of the more powerful things about it is that you can now call into your creativity well and come up with something that you're not going to get the chai out of the paper, but now you can maybe let it dry and let it become part of the composition that's even more beautiful than it ever would have been that you could have planned for it to be.
That's such a lovely thought.
As an inspiration, and then I play, or we play with the idea of responsibility is really response, space, ability.
Ability.
That you have that ability to respond creatively and beautifully and make something just all the more better for it.
So in my work, I was mostly a self-taught artist. I had a couple of little guidelines here and there, but mostly self-taught. And one of the things that, I don't know where it came from, maybe my mom or whatever, that if you make a mistake, make it work for you as opposed to, you know. So when I'm writing and when my pen is going around the paper and everything, if it makes a skip, well, I'll go and make something beautiful between the two lines. I don't try to go back and continue the line to make it look like it's perfect. Perfect is very overrated. So what I do is make something, have an opportunity to put something very beautiful in there. And I will put a flourish or a thing or a little, you know, entangled tangle or whatever. Yeah. But we teach people how to respond in these situations, which is so valuable because that takes away the fear and the anxiety of, oh, here's my piece. It's looking really good. I'm so afraid to screw it up. And that, I think, is one of the most important things that we teach.
Yeah. It's lovely. And I guess it also teaches us to be more accepting of ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
Bring in more acceptance for our flaws and whatever we are lacking in. And maybe also keep on improvising on situations that we are coming across. That's amazing.
So
that's beautiful.
Zentangle seemed to creep into people's lives, and we heard them. They would come back and say, "Oh yeah, I can do this now. I can do that now. I'm not bothered by this. I'm not bothered by that." And it was this magic that was going on even in spite of us.
Well, we notice a way we respond differently to, you know. Stuff happens, you know, stuff happens that you wouldn't want to choose to happen, but once it happens, okay, how do we deal with this? We used to think of this whole grand, okay, well, we've got to do this, then we'll do that, then after that, we'll do this, and if this doesn't, then that has to work for the next thing, and we're thinking like 17 steps ahead. But in Zentangle, this whole idea of you focus on the stroke you're doing, do that as beautifully and responsibly and wonderfully as you can, and then review the situation and look, well, what's the next step? And then focus on that. And it gives you a chance to respond to an ever-changing situation instead of getting locked into one strategy that may no longer apply after the fifth or sixth step that you're into it. And it also takes the stress off of your person, you know, individually, that, okay, now I have to have all these, you know, balls in the air and they all have to be perfect. And no, you just get it, it changed the way we respond to things. It's been wonderful.
Lovely. And I guess, you know, what you're talking about is being more mindful, being more in the present, and just concentrating, as you're saying, on each stroke as we are drawing them. So that's an amazing concept.
You know, I think it's a difference between, you know, there's all these C words. There's controlling, there's creating, there's consuming, you know, and
yes.
I think people think, okay, well, if I can control the situation, I'll be happy. Or
right.
they think, if I can get enough things to consume, I'll be happy, or at least I'll impress my neighbors.
Yes.
But the happiness or the healing or that wonderful feeling seems to be come from creating. And when that really comes through you, it changes everything, because it moves you know, there's a lot of talk about like victim status, or, you know, like when you're a creator, you're no longer a victim.
Right. Right.
So you move, even the tiniest little bit, you're moving in the other direction, you know, and it's, you know, like if you're on a highway and you're like, you're going the wrong direction, you know, like you're driving from, I don't know, Delhi to Mumbai or something.
Right.
So you want it, it's hot, you're going up to Dehradun, you know, you want to
yes.
go up and go where it's not so hot, maybe Mussoorie or something.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, we're going in the wrong direction. At that point, the most creative thing you can do is to simply turn around and start going back north, you know, and all of a sudden, you've controlled the situation. You may not even be any closer to Dehradun, but you're actually going where you want to go, and that's really empowering.
Lovely. Yes. I guess that's quite profound. And basically, we're looking for controls. And somewhere, you know, I guess I've read in one of your writings that humans are wired to create. It's just this, we are not tapping on that creativity. So probably Zentangle is a way to tap on our creativity, that well of creativity that is probably there in each one of us. So,
And it ripples out, you know, because you
yes,
do it on
does.
A little piece of paper on that surface. Well, then you go to a bigger surface, maybe your family or your house or your world.
Right. And you've already been doing so many studies on children, on schizophrenics, and on you know, people who are suffering from severe mental illness. So how does it, you know, affect this set of people, this group of people? How can people, you know, benefit who are suffering from these emotional ailments from Zentangle?
I think that there is an innate ability to heal in everybody. And perhaps part of the challenge is acknowledging that and knowing how to access it and trusting it. Sometimes maybe looking outside for an answer in a medicine or a person or an advisor. They all have their place and their role, and they're critical at different points. But ultimately, the role is, the point is to discover that gift is within you. You know, there's so many stories I remember from, you know, from being in India. You know, the traveler who's a thief knows the man has the gold, and every night he searches the man's belongings for it and can't find it. And then
right.
at the end of the trip, he confesses and he says, you know, oh, I was trying to rob you. I couldn't find it, but we'll never see each other again. But sir, please tell me where you hid the gold. And the man said, well, I hid it under your pillow every night. You know, so it's like that. And
right.
and once you trust that you have that connection, you begin to circulate, we just came up with this other, you know, the idea of circulation. When circulation is cut off, like on your arm or something, a tourniquet or something, you have to restore the circulation really quickly for the arm to stay healthy.
Right.
I think we've cut ourselves off from a larger circulation. And here words are difficult. I think there's better words in Hindi and Sanskrit than in English. But, you know,
go for it.
Cut off from that more spiritual, larger connection, and trust in that part of ourselves that is spiritual or divine or whatever words you want to wrap around it. And that's where the benefit comes from. It ultimately comes, you heal yourself. And other people can help you connect with that. But we've seen, you know, and a quick story, and this is a...
I was going to say, yeah. Tell the story about, you know, carrying the weight.
Oh, yeah. So okay. I've got this cup here.
Right.
You know, a cup of water. And it's not that heavy. It's very light. But if I hold it out here for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half hour, come back in an hour, and my arm is going to be hurting a lot.
Yes.
If I can just know that I can set it down for 15 minutes, I can pick it back up and hold it for much longer. All of a sudden, it seems lighter. It's the same weight.
Yes.
But I know that I can control the situation. I have the tools, not so much to control the situation, but to relieve my burden anytime I choose. And that makes the burden much lighter.
Lovely. Yes.
The accessibility of Zentangle, because it's something that you could carry with you very easily, a woman's purse or a man's pocket, and you can take it out wherever you are. You can sit out in a park. You can be sitting in a, you know, anywhere in the Department of Motor Vehicles or any place where you have to, you know, be still. You can access this very easily and beautifully. And you always come out saying, yeah. And it's not just that you did this. You have nothing left after this. But after you do a Zentangle, you've got this beautiful art that you can either keep or give to somebody else and have them appreciate it too. And here it is. You're getting this gift, and it's a gift that you can give to other people.
Lovely. And I would say it's a kind of a non-verbal journaling.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. We did a class or a series of classes at a high school here.
Okay.
And part of their protocol was that every day the students would journal. And they ended up using it on Friday. They journaled non-verbally. And you know, it's a wonderful thing, because you can, when you do a tile, it's non-representational. So you can perhaps, when you revisit the tile, turn it this way and that, look at it so-called upside down or another direction, and you see different things in it, which is not so easy if you wrote down the words. If you were like really upset, you read them again, you get upset all over again. Like that.
That's wonderful. And you've been training a lot of people. There are certified Zentangle trainers all over the world. So
yeah,
that's
actually
amazing
really,
work.
It's bizarre, because we have now
over
6,000
teachers,
certified Zentangle teachers.
God.
We have a lot in India, and we have them. They're now in 62 countries.
Lovely.
Probably even more. We haven't figured it out yet.
And people found us. You know, one of the odd, I mean, we have our website and we have our newsletter and those sorts of things, but we've never gone out and advertised. We've never monetized our YouTube channel. We've never, you know, we just put things out there and word of mouth.
And we work out of our house with our neighbors and our friends and our family. We're not a big corporation. We are a small, passionate, dedicated unit that's not like a big company. So nobody's bought us out. Nobody's telling us what to do.
Right.
Nobody's trying to change our mind to fit into this project or a product.
Agenda or
agenda. Nobody, we haven't allowed anybody to change our minds or to make us say something we don't want to say.
We're sitting in our basement. We have no debt. And we're, yeah, I mean, I say that like we didn't take a loan so to do this. It just sort of organically grew. And we're very, very grateful. It's like this wonderful gift.
Wow. So that's an amazing journey and an amazing story. And may there be more and more of a ripple effect. May there be more Zentangle trainers. And may there be more and more people benefiting from Zentangle art. And I must say heartfelt gratitude to you, Rick and Maria, for giving this world this beautiful, beautiful art of Zentangle. And
thank you.
More power to both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for reaching out to us. It's been a great conversation. If anybody wants to get in touch with us, just go to zentangle.com and everything else will you'll be able to find us. And if you look on there, if you're hearing this on Jaya's podcast, you can find
Chasing Sunshine.
You will find and we'll link to yours. If this is on our channel, we'll link to yours, and so you can find Jaya as well. But there's a list on zentangle.com of where all the CZTs are in India to take a class.
You don't want to
thank
say
you. Mm-hmm. She wants to share. Yeah, chati ki main Hindi mein bolna.
Oh, lovely. That would be amazing for all our listeners.
So, main itna istemal nahi karta hoon, magar kuch saal pehle main Bharat mein raha aur Shabdkosh ke saath aur Amitabh Bachchan aur Rekha ki movies ko dekh ke apne aap ko sikha diya. क्योंकि मैं translation में in translation people put their own filters on तो मैं हिंदी में समझना चाहता था.
बहुत अच्छा. This is amazing. और हिंदी में सुनके Rick, I hope you're able to understand me since you spent so many years here in India. So हिंदी में सुनके आपको बहुत अच्छा लगा. And हमें बहुत अच्छा लगेगा अगर आप इंडिया आते रहें.
हाँ जी.
And we keep meeting and there are more Zentangle workshops here in India as well.
तो ये बहुत खुशी की बात है और हम चाहते हैं कि कुछ समय में हम हिंदी में Zentangle class करेंगे.
बहुत अच्छा रहेगा. And हिंदी में Zentangle class करने से I think हम लोग masses को reach out कर सकेंगे.
हाँ जी.
And I guess यही intention है आपके foundation का भी.
हाँ जी.
And wish you all the best, all the luck in the world.
So thank you so much. And this
is awesome.
It's been a
pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Wonderful conversation. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much.
Heartfelt gratitude, dear Maria and Rick, for giving us an insight into this beautiful world of Zentangles. I am sure the listeners have greatly benefited from our conversation today. And this amazing world of Zentangles will help many of us walk the path of emotional well-being. More power to you.